Gentry had been staring at the lake in silence while he ordered it. It allowed him a chance to appreciate her regal profile. Seeing her expressive face at rest intrigued him. The waiter returned and refilled their water glasses. Gentry repeatedly tapped a finger on the side of the glass. "I'm sorry for being flip about your life earlier. I don't know you well enough to guess your motives. You must love it there, and love your dad to want to honor him this way." His father's face surfaced in his mind, followed closely by the two-story flamingo pink building that had been damaged by the earthquake, and then the aftershock that brought down what had remained while his father was inside.
"You look haunted."
Gentry's eyes went round.
"That's about right," he muttered aloud.
"Sorry. I'm not good at respecting normal boundaries, in case you hadn't noticed." She allowed him a chance to decide whether to share more. When he remained tongue-tied, she said,
"I admire your work ethic, but you need some joy, too.
Before you leave, I'm determined to make a few fun memories with you, Ian Crawford." She raised the martini glass to her lips and enjoyed a long swallow.
"Promise me, once you go, you'll remember to make yourself happy now and then. Not to be cliched, but you do only live once."
Chapter 7. Merriment. According to Merriam-Webster, light-hearted gaiety or fun-making, hilarity. According to me, my mission for Colt and Ian. "You might as well come inside." Gentry turned off the engine and stared at her parents' home. "I need to visit for at least 10 minutes, or my mom will find some new way to torment me at work." Ian shifted in the passenger seat, rubbing his palms along his thighs.
"They probably prefer to spend those few minutes without me."
"Oh, trust me. My mother wants a chance to get a clearer read on you, and that will take the pressure off me." Gentry winked, although she was dead serious.
"Great," came his dry response.
Gentry patted his hand, then withdrew, resisting the urge to turn his palm over and trace its lines to discover new things about him. "If I can put up with her judgment for 26 years and counting, you can do it for a few minutes. It'll be fun. A judgy standoff. Maybe I should sell tickets."
"You're hilarious," he mocked, tugging on her hair.
For a second, they sat there, her hair wound around his finger. Then he released it. She covered her breathlessness with a joke.
"Now, now. Don't envy my sense of humor. I can teach you to have one, too." "Keep it up, wise ass," he twisted in his seat. "But here's my question. Why do you two argue so much?
Resentment?
Disappointment?
Attention?
Habit."
She flung the door open and exited the garage, eager to walk away from that discussion. Rounding the hood, she observed her parents' home from the perspective of an outsider, like Ian. Not a pebble littered the intricately designed granite walkway. No weed dared blemish the massive flower beds. Everything was perfectly manicured and tended to, exactly like her mother. And just like her mother, most of that tending came from someone else's effort. The stylist, the decorator, the gardener, and so on. To meet Jenna Cabot now, one would never believe she'd been Jenna Buchanan from Danbury, Connecticut, daughter of a single working mom who'd worked at Ruby's Dry Cleaner by day and waited the counter at the Silver Star Diner by night. She and her sister had been raised in a tiny but clean apartment, Gentry's mom had studied endlessly, knowing her only shot at attending college required a full scholarship. When Jenna was 11, her father, a mall cop with a gambling habit, had taken off for parts unknown. If Gentry's mom had shown any sorrow about that, she never showed it. But that history made Jenna leery of most men. Gentry had met that grandfather once, when she was around 10 years old, and too young to understand the truth. Having had no other living grandfather, and being from a dysfunctional family, she'd been thrilled when Grandpa John had appeared. Finally, someone who might like her best. She remembered dragging him by the hand up to her room to show him her drawings. She'd even performed a little of her ballet recital to win his love, to become his someone special. Grandparents loved their grandchildren, after all. They bragged endlessly, especially Shelley Smith's grandmother. Of course, Grandpa John had only come to Oregon in search of a handout. He'd been there less than 48 hours when her mom handed him $5,000 and told him to leave. He took the money without looking back or contacting Gentry again.
"What's wrong?"
Ian touched her shoulder. She emerged from that memory, slightly shaken. Back then, she'd been livid with her mom for sending Grandpa John away. Now, she understood that keeping that man out of her life had been a giant favor.
"Sorry, zoned out. Must have been the martini."
"Maybe I ought to be driving."
"I'll be fine."
She opened the door and watched Ian struggle not to react to the marble floors, bronze banister, and soaring ceiling.
"Okay, McJay, take stock and then bury that indignation before my mom sees it."
He raised his hands.
"I didn't say a word."
"You didn't have to.
You'd suck at poker."
Their conversation got cut short by Colt's wail echoing through the cavernous home. She clapped her hands together.
"My little bugaboo knows I'm here."
Ian grinned. "He's clairvoyant."
She gestured for him to follow her back to the family room. In the past, she'd proudly brought friends home. Tonight, her stomach twisted uncomfortably with each step they took through the rambling home. She didn't dare look back at Ian, who, no doubt, would turn it into a shelter for as many people as he and his mother could squeeze under its roof. Her mother stood over Gentry's nearly naked son in the corner of the family room, dabbing at her shirt. Gentry covered a smile, knowing Colt had just peed on her mom. Not a surprise when she thought about it. After all, changing diapers had always been the nanny's job.
"Everything okay?"
"Everything's perfect." Her mom dropped the towel and cradled Colt. He wriggled and fussed, but Jenna didn't give up easily. She continued to nuzzle him against her bony shoulder. Gentry hugged her dad after he and Ian shook hands.
"I bet you're ready for a little peace and quiet?"
No, we love having Colt to ourselves. I'm thinking he'll be a terrific singer with all the practice his lungs are getting."
Her dad beamed at Ian.
"I can't get enough of my grandkids. 2 in less than 6 months? I'm blessed."
Her mother raised Colt into the air. Staring into his eyes, she affected a gooey grandmother voice.
"But you're my favorite, Colton Cabot. Yes, you are. Yes, you are."
Her mom seemed doomed to repeat history with her us versus them mentality when it came to Gentry's siblings. Ian's brows rose right before he looked away.
"We don't have favorites," her dad hurried to add. "Both boys are adorable Cabots."
Her mother finished dressing Colt, continuing to speak her mind through a false conversation with Colt.
Right now you're a Cabot, but what if your mommy finds Smith and he wants to change your last name? We don't even know what that could be, do we? Has she thought of that?
I'm standing right here, Gentry sighed. I know. Her mother held Colt tight again, brushing his wispy dark hair with her hand. I'm hoping you'll reconsider this idea of hunting down Colt's father.
Gentry considered her options. A. Make like normal with a sarcastic remark. B. Tell her mom it wasn't any of her business. Or C. Show empathy.
I get it, Mom. You worry that Colt's dad will be like your father. But what if he's like mine?
She smiled at her dad, who threw his arm around her shoulders and hugged her.
There aren't many fathers like yours.
Her mom said it in a way that sounded like a compliment about herself for snagging him, or stealing him, if you looked at it from Leslie Cabot's perspective. Either way, Gentry's patience had run out.
I've made up my mind, Mother.
How was dinner? Her dad changed the subject.
Fine. Gentry turned to Ian, who, despite her best efforts, hadn't quite removed that stick from his behind. I'd hoped Colby could kick some foundation money Ian's way, but it's against the charter or something.
She offered other help that will likely be as valuable, Ian said.
Mr. Manners, no wonder Sarah liked him so well.
I'm sure she'll make good on her promise, her father said. Did you like the food?
Of course, Ian said.
Her father shook his head, chuckling.
I know it's top-notch stuff, but I prefer food I can pronounce.
Ian grinned.
I was skeptical at first, but my meal was delicious.
Well, that's good.
I'm grateful the place is doing well. Colby and Alec needed a win after everything they've been through, her dad said.
Gentry reached for her son, eager to leave.
Nothing had gone quite according to plan tonight.
While she didn't know how to salvage it all, she knew more time with her mom wasn't the answer.
We'd better get Boo to bed. Thanks for watching him.
Anytime.
Her mother hovered, stroking Colt's head, her face soft and full of adoration.
I love this little fusspot.
Gentry couldn't recall her mom ever being so gentle with her. Instead of hugs, praise, and tenderness, Gentry had been dealt rules, lectures, and consequences. That bitter memory caused her to flinch when her mother tried to kiss her goodbye. She allowed her mom to love on Colt because she wanted everyone to love on her son, but she couldn't pretend that she and her mom enjoyed a warm rapport. For Pete's sake, they were still working on cordial.
See you on Monday, Gentry said, as she and Ian left.
Colt was unusually quiet during the ride home. She should be doing cartwheels that he'd settled down, but she couldn't quite trust it.
What did your dad mean about Colby and Alec?
Ian asked after a minute, referring to her dad's slip about them needing a win. She supposed their history wasn't much of a secret anymore, and Ian didn't appear to have an agenda.
Here's the short version. Colby's late husband, Mark, committed suicide in front of her by jumping off their condo balcony several weeks after he dared their friend, Alec's brother, Joe, to jump off the cliff above Punchbowl Falls. That dare killed Joe. Everyone grieved for a long time. She thought of Alec's other secrets, but decided not to share all the details. Until recently, nobody but Colby knew Mark was bipolar because he wanted to keep that secret. So Basically, it took a long time for the families to heal, forgive each other, and put their lives back together.
Wow.
Ian stared ahead, eyes wide and fixed on the road.
I'd never suspect so much turmoil and loss.
Because people with money never suffer real pain and loss, right? She probably shouldn't have been so sarcastic, but she wanted him to stop making assumptions about people like her.
He didn't reply, so she kept quiet for the remainder of the drive home.
The silence gave her time to think. Think about her mom's past and the present. Think about her sister's change of circumstance. Think about her life and her choices. About the things she wanted for her son, but didn't know how to provide. And then she thought about Ian. She didn't want to interfere with his plans to save the world, but it seemed a shame he couldn't do it from Oregon. If they had more time together, she'd probably learn a lot from him. And she could teach him a thing or two, like how to enjoy himself now and then. Everyone needs good memories to get them through the days when life slams into them like a tsunami. But even when the worst happens, beauty can come from destruction, like Colby and Alex love, or Ty becoming a Cabot because of his mother's overdose.
You look like you're plotting, Ian said, when they pulled into the garage.
Gentry unfastened Colt from his car seat and laid his sleepy body on her shoulder. In a quiet voice, she said, I'm sure you caught my mom's little dig against Ty. I don't want Colt to think of Ty as anything less than a cousin. Honestly, I wonder if my mom ever hears herself.
Colt will take his cues from you. If you accept Ty as family, he will too.
Could it be that simple? I hope so. The truth is, I haven't spent much time with Ty lately because I've been struggling to handle Colt.
Ian held open the door for her. They stopped in the entry, which was lit by a small lamp.
She didn't turn on the overhead lights, hoping to keep Colt lulled in his half-slumber long enough to transfer him to his bassinet. Ian locked the front door, then raked a hand through those mahogany waves of hair.
Invite Ty over tomorrow. I'll lend a hand. Your brother and Sarah might like a little Sunday break, and you can spend time with your nephew.
You'd help? She stopped and stared at him. Most men she'd known wanted her for her body or her money. None had ever gone out of their way to be kind without some other agenda.
I mean, I'll pay you for working.
No need. I'm not busy, and I want to help.
Ian's eyes looked darker than normal. His pupils were almost as big as his irises in the dimly lit space. All week they'd exchanged these little moments, the kind riddled with delicious tingles. At another time in her life, she would have taken advantage of it and kissed him. The mere thought made her gaze at his mouth, which sent a rousing shiver down her back. But Ian Crawford wouldn't be impressed by a bold sexual move. And anyway, she still had Colt in her arms.
Let's make it fun. I'll plan a picnic by the lake.
Gentry's imagination kicked into gear, coming up with a plan to ensure both Ty and Ian had a memorable day.
Sounds nice.
He stood so close, yet remained impossibly far away. She did not want to like him, or be curious about how his coarse hair would feel in her fingers, or fantasize that he could soothe her the way he did her son. Those thoughts only set her up for rejection, like with Grandpa John and everyone else who so easily left her behind. As Ian would when he left for Haiti,
and still. Whenever Ian did go, she wanted him to remember her fondly, at least for a little while.
I'll make it perfect.
Ian sprawled out on the gray and lime green plaid blanket, feeding Colt from a bottle, while Gentry chased Ty around the edge of the lake with her camera. In a pile beside Ian lay a giant bubble wand, water guns, and a beach ball, all of which Gentry had purchased that morning. Hunter and Sarah had hesitated to leave Ty with them. Born to a drug addict hadn't been the easiest start in the kid's young life, so Ian didn't take offense to their protectiveness. Gentry had worn her brother down, though, as Ian suspected she often did. Sarah had dropped off Ty an hour ago, along with a list of instructions and rules, which Gentry conveniently forgot on the kitchen counter. Now, she chased the toddler along the water's edge, snapping photos as they went. Ty's delighted screeches echoed across the lake as he splashed in the water, sandy mud oozing between his toes. Within 20 minutes, his mud-soaked shirt and pants clung to him. His overstimulated smile would melt even Jenna's heart. Ian couldn't remember spending idle time with his own parents. Picnics he'd attended had been church affairs where they'd also collected money or clothing for shelters. He hadn't a single memory of his mother chasing him with a camera, her hair flying in the breeze, creating a scene for the sole purpose of making him laugh. He'd never thought he'd missed out on anything until the joyful sounds of Ty's rare giggle and the rustling leaves overhead caused a slight pang. Eventually, Gentry and Ty returned to the blanket to eat. Ian placed Colt in the car seat so he'd be safe but upright and able to observe. He stretched a bit, savoring the sunny afternoon and mood. A mood he attributed to the complicated, playful woman who'd been consuming more of his thoughts each day.
"I got Ty to laugh. Now I need to work my magic on you."
Gentry smiled at Ian, her cheeks pink from exertion. As if that magic hadn't already taken root.
"Planning to chase me with the camera?"
"No. Getting you to loosen up will take a bit of creativity, possibly even something mildly shocking," Gentry teased.
Her warning made his body hum and the hairs on his neck come alive. She excited him with very little effort, a dangerous reality for both of them. She looped her hair up into some kind of knot on her head and then fixed Ty a plate with a crust-free ham sandwich, orange slices, and a vanilla cupcake.
"Ty, this is our secret, okay?"
"Kay."
He immediately stuffed the cupcake into his mouth, eyes wide with sugar fever.
"Eat the other stuff first, honey."
She grimaced at Ian as she handed him a ham and turkey sandwich loaded with extras, muttering, "Now I get Hunter's no sugar rule."
"You know you'll get busted."
Ian had no doubt Hunter would not find it cute that Gentry had broken his rule.
"I'm surprised by you, too, considering how you insisted I follow your rules."
"Not letting my son cry himself to sleep is not the same as giving a kid a treat. Jeesh. You, my brother, and Sarah could benefit from a little rule-breaking now and then."
"Moderation in all things, I think."
She leaned forward and drolly added,
"No one ever died from a cupcake."
"This is the first time you've used your oven, so these cupcakes might actually be lethal," he said, straight-faced, bracing for a whack to the thigh.
"Even I can't mess up box-brand cupcakes and canned icing."
Let's test that. He gestured for a cupcake.
She stretched across the blanket to reach the Tupperware container. Seeing her on her hands and knees in those micro shorts and tank top did strange things to his heart. Fortunately, or unfortunately, she was quick to sit back on her haunches. He reached out for the cupcake, still buzzing from his physical response, so he didn't pay much attention to her funny expression. Before he understood what was happening, she lunged forward and smashed that cupcake in his face. She then scrambled backward, laughing nervously at his stunned response. Both of them ignored Colt's startled cry as Ian jumped to his feet to chase after her. Once he caught her from behind, he lifted her off the ground and swung her around while she laughed. A burst of joy shocked his heart. Gentry wriggled in his arms, all laughter and soft curves and perfumed hair. His senses lit up, setting him on fire. Everything in him longed to lay her down on the soft grass and kiss her senseless. Instead, he rubbed his sugared face against her neck and shoulder. Torture for him, because her soft skin tempted him beyond control. He released her before he acted on his urges, then swiped the icing off her neck with his fingers, licking one.
"Look at you, Ian Crawford."
Her eyes twinkled as she fell to the ground beside Ty. Then she carefully avoided Ian's gaze while fixing the hairs that had fallen loose.
"Now I finally know what you look like when you're truly happy."
Ian didn't know what to say to that, so he brushed off the last of the crumbs from his shirt before taking a seat on the blanket. He rocked Colt's car seat, buying himself a few seconds for his heart to settle. Thankfully, Gentry didn't bombard him with questions or commentary. She tended to Ty, encouraging him to eat the healthy food he'd ignored. Once Ty had cleaned his plate, Gentry filled the large plastic dish with the liquid soap and tested the bubble wand. Ty's eyes grew 3 sizes rounder as she created a massive oblong bubble that glistened in the sunlight. He tried to catch it, popping it in the process. Before the kid's tears spilled over, Gentry formed another and then popped it herself.
"Your turn."
She knelt down to hand Ty the wand, but Colt started crying again, as if he sensed losing his mother's attention to a rival.
"Definitely his mother's son," Ian thought with a smile.
"I've got him," Ian said, enjoying watching Gentry play with her nephew. What a gift she was to these two boys, so wild and free and full of humor.
"Thanks."
Gentry patiently showed Ty how to manipulate the wand to create the enormous bubbles that glistened with misshapen rainbows. Once he got the hang of it, she picked up her camera and shot photos from every angle. Sunlight filtered through the trees while Ian jostled Colt on his lap and continued snacking on his lunch. In the distance, a pair of 60-something women was walking toward them on the nearby path. As they passed by, the chubbier lady waved at them, exclaiming,
"You have a beautiful family."
"Thank you," Gentry hollered back without correcting them. Her face lit up with a giant smile. Funny how 5 words altered everything. Minutes earlier, Ian was simply helping Gentry create memories for her son, her nephew, and herself. Now, the 10-pound weight on his lap felt like more than just his charge. Gentry's easy laugh and Ty's curious face also took on a different, if illusory, meaning. For those few seconds, Ian imagined himself a father, a husband, an uncle. It didn't feel quite right, but it didn't feel all wrong either.
Gentry broke his train of thought when she ran through Ty's large bubble while singing out, "Ta-da!" Ty's dimples deepened as he struggled with the wand to make another.
"Why didn't you correct her?"
Ian finally asked.
Gentry shrugged. "I liked being a family, even if it only lasted 4 seconds."
She turned away, redirecting her attention to Ty.
A study in contradiction. This woman whose only consistent behavior was an attempt to build a family for her son, even as she held her mother at bay.
Colt fussed in his lap, so Ian nicked his finger across some frosting and stuck it in the baby's mouth. Within 3 seconds, Colt's mouth clamped around Ian's index finger and sucked it dry. For the past 90 minutes, Ian hadn't thought once about his future, Haiti, or any of the other things that usually preoccupied him. He'd been swept up in the idyll of a summer day, happy kids, and a beautiful woman. Now, with Colt snuggling against him, he knew a moment of panic. A few more weeks spent this way might make him soft. Leaving this baby would test his heart. And Gentry? Saying goodbye to her and the different kind of future she dangled before him might mess with him the most.
Chapter 8 Flutter. According to Merriam-Webster, A. To move with quick wavering or flapping motions. B. To vibrate in irregular spasms. According to me, my insides when Ian is close. Ian conveniently avoided Gentry's gaze while helping her buckle the kids into their seats. For a little while today, she'd thought he'd let himself relax. He even frolicked. Then she'd spooked him with that family remark. Like a groundhog, he'd burrowed underground. Ian closed her car's back door.
I'll grab an Uber.
Don't be ridiculous. It's 5 minutes out of my way. Tops.
Okay, 15. But Gentry wanted to see the infamous Angel House and meet his mother. She could learn a thing or two about mothering from the woman who'd raised a man with so much compassion.
I've got a little time before Hunter and Sarah expect Ty back home. Plus, I bet your mom would enjoy seeing him.
Ian slunk into the passenger seat.
She probably would.
Gentry rolled down all the windows and cranked up the radio, forcing all three passengers to listen to her not-too-awful rendition of Rachel Platten's A Better Place. She hadn't chosen the sweet love song, but her heart raced to match its peppy tempo. The lyrics sounded like they'd been ripped from her thoughts and, as such, pumped hope and happiness and a little sorrow into her chest. Ian sat unnaturally still until he turned and stared out the side window. That only made Gentry want to sing louder, to do anything she could think of to provoke him into revealing something that proved maybe she wasn't imagining. The earlier signs of interest, of desire, of more than that, though, because for her, Ian Crawford was the first man who could tempt her into thinking beyond a fling, even with that stick of his still making an occasional appearance. He didn't use her. He wasn't phony or fickle. Ian's past showed that he knew how to love and commit. He challenged and encouraged her, giving her confidence in her ability to mother Colt. And today, when those women thought that Ian was her husband, well, that shot her daydreams to a whole new level. She told herself that harmless fantasies were safe because Ian came with a built-in expiration date. His prior commitment wasn't the same as rejection. Either way, she couldn't have him pity her
or think that she'd be pining away for him.
"I can help you raise money," she blurted out, surprising them both.
"What?" She couldn't blame him for failing to follow her train of thought, which changed tracks so often even she had a hard time keeping up.
"We struck out with Colby, but maybe I could help set up a kick-ass crowdfunding page."
"There might be restrictions on NGOs."
"So, I'll figure that out. I could promote it on my blog. Do you have photos of the people and kids you've helped?"
"Not really. I used to take pictures in the beginning because I wanted to capture everything. Now I'm too focused on the work to think about that."
Ian rubbed his jaw while mulling over her plan, eyes bright with interest.
"Crowdfunding, though, it's not a bad idea."
"How come every time I have a good idea, people act so surprised?" She tightened her grip on the steering wheel. "Do I seem like an idiot?"
"You're definitely not an idiot."
Ian took his phone out of his back pocket and started scrolling through his contacts.
"I'll shoot Archer an email to see if he knows of any restrictions on crowdfunding."
"Archer?"
"My dad's doctor friend. The one who teaches me French."
"I know who he is. Why would he know about crowdfunding?"
"He's got more experience with NGOs and donors than I do. Until recently, I'd run around the world, volunteering wherever needed. Archer stayed in Haiti. He knows all the players and can get quick answers."
Although Gentry couldn't imagine living under the conditions and with the risks Ian had described since they'd met, part of her envied the adventure of his unusual life. The contrast made her realize how empty her attempts, or misadventures, had been. They pulled up to the curb in front of a rather unattractive, mustard-yellow, brick-and-siding split-level home on a quiet, tree-lined street.
"Did you grow up here?"
"No. My mom took this position after my dad died."
Ian opened the door. He always avoided eye contact whenever his father came up. Gentry smelled a story there. She squelched her questions. "For now."
"Should I wait here?"
He finally met her gaze.
"Yeah, let me grab her."
Gentry spent a second checking on Colt, who'd fallen asleep in the car seat, as had Ty. She walked around to the other side of the car to wake her nephew. Her shorts rode up her butt as she bent over to unbuckle him, causing her to tug at them with one hand while finger-fluffing Ty's hair with the other, hoping to make a good impression on Ian's mother.
"Ahem."
Ian cleared his throat from a few feet away. Gentry turned around before he cleared the smirk off his face, and his mother finished her head-to-toe assessment. The woman's gaze lingered on Gentry's ankle tattoo for a moment. Gentry knew Mrs. Crawford had probably seen it all, but she probably preferred her son to hang out with more wholesome women. The older woman's matronly face was surrounded by silver hair. Given Ian's height and more angular features, he had to resemble his father because his mom was round everywhere. As an afterthought, Gentry stuck out her hand.
"Hi, I'm Gentry Cabot, Sarah's sister-in-law."
"Hi, Gentry. I'm Gloria."
Gloria's gaze now darted between her son and Gentry.
"Thank you for giving Ian a place to hang his hat while he's in town."
"It's been my pleasure," Gentry admitted, blabbing. "I'll be lost when he goes."
Ian blinked at the sentiment.
"You'll be perfectly fine."
"He thinks if he repeats that enough, I'll eventually believe him," Gentry admitted to his mom, whose gaze studied her son. "The daily chaos before he showed up proves otherwise. But he's got his plans, so I'll have to manage on my own."
"You won't be on your own for long."
He caught her eye. then looked away. A hint that maybe Ian didn't look forward to Smith taking his place. Too bad she couldn't dig into all that right now.
Being a single mom can be scary, Gloria said, but you look like you can handle it.
Gentry had heard that kind of remark her whole life. At first, it sounded like a compliment, but beneath the shiny top layer was the ugly stuff, the snap judgment. Gloria had taken one look at Gentry's tattoos, snug clothes, and ring-free finger, and dubbed Gentry trashy, hard, or smutty. None of those labels were a compliment.
I'll do my best, Gentry smiled, burying the pain of such dismissal.
Before I go, I thought you might like to say hello to Ty. She stepped aside so Ty could exit the car.
Gloria crouched and opened her arms for a hug.
Oh my, Ty, look what a big boy you are now.
Ty had never been demonstrative, and only recently had become affectionate with Sarah and Hunter, so it didn't surprise Gentry when he didn't run into Gloria's arms.
It did surprise her when he took off for the house, calling out, Mama!
Gentry clutched her chest, like she could somehow block the daggers those cries jabbed into her heart.
Oh, dear, Gloria said. He must associate the house with Pam.
Crap! Gentry took off after Ty and scooped him up. He struggled, reaching over her shoulder.
Mama's not there, Ty. Let's get you home to your mommy.
All she could think to do now was distract him, compounding one mistake with another.
How about another cupcake?
She asked Ian to buckle him back in the car seat while she fished around the trunk for another cupcake. The icing had melted a bit, but the treat might keep him occupied long enough to let her get away from this place and those memories.
It's okay, Gentry. Ian rubbed her arm. Her body flushed with waves of heat as tears threatened to spill.
Idiot, idiot, idiot. After handing Ty the cupcake, she closed the door and faced Ian and his mom.
I'm so sorry. It never occurred to me that coming here could upset him. Sarah's gonna kill me.
Sarah is a lovely woman. I'm sure she'll understand, Gloria said. Gentry's gaffe had softened the woman's condescension. In this case, Gentry would make an exception and accept her pity.
We all make mistakes, Ian assured her.
Sarah never makes mistakes. Gentry kept running her hands over her hair, as if that would get her out of the jam with Hunter.
I'd better go. Sorry to be rude. Nice to meet you, Gloria.
Gentry scooted around to the driver's side with a quick wave. At least the cupcake-palooza distracted Ty, who'd stopped calling for his mother. She'd have to remember to remove the icing from his cheeks before Sarah and Hunter saw it. In her rearview mirror, Gentry watched Ian and his mom pile into a run-down Honda. If she had to guess, they were on their way to a soup kitchen or something similar. Definitely not going to Pioneer Place for a shopping spree. She made a mental note to herself to be sure to expose Colt to both types of mother-son outings when he got older. She arrived at Hunter's 10 minutes later, grabbed a fistful of baby wipes from Colt's diaper bag, and cleaned Ty's face and fingers. She kissed his head, eyes closed, thinking her 100th silent apology.
Okay, let's go see your mommy and daddy.
She detached Colt's car seat from its base and carried him to Hunter's front door with Ty in tow. Sarah greeted them and immediately crouched to hug her son.
Did you have the best time? I missed you.
Ty accepted the hug before pushing away to run through the house, presumably on a hunt for his toys.
Wow, He's wired.
Sarah stood with a puzzled expression. Shrugging, she then offered Colt her best smile while asking, Is Ian in the car?
No.
Gentry couldn't have this conversation on the porch.
Can I come in?
Of course. I want to hear all about your day with the boys. Sarah waved her inside. Hunter's in the kitchen. Gentry hadn't spent much time here since those early weeks of pregnancy when she'd moved in to escape her mom. Every time she remembered the adoption promise she'd broken, an uneasy feeling, like the one experienced when cresting the high point of a roller coaster, grabbed hold. After today's incident, Gentry's doubts about whether keeping Colt had been in his best interests soared. Hunter and Sarah might be uptight and too structured, but they'd never be as thoughtless as she'd been today. What kind of emotional damage had Gentry caused Ty, and how might she hurt Colt in the coming years? Gentry sat Colt's car seat on the island and kissed her brother hello. Hopefully he wouldn't notice her clammy skin. The near spotless kitchen smelled like sautéed onions. A quick glance at the plate beside the stove revealed a cheeseburger waiting for its topping. She aimed for a joke.
You have the worst eating habits.
I've cut back, he shrugged. Ask Sarah. You have an interesting way of making things sound better than they are, Sarah teased, then cocked a brow at Gentry. Sure, he's cut back. A little. Now, here's an important question. Can I cuddle Colt?
Sure.
If Sarah had Colt in her arms, it'd be harder for her to strangle Gentry when she learned about Ty's visit to the Angel House. She removed Colt from his car seat and handed him over, waiting until Sarah seemed blissfully distracted.
So, I have a confession.
Let me guess. You broke our rules.
Hunter lowered the wooden spoon, shaking his head and smiling, as if he expected it.
Which one?
He didn't seem too upset, but only because he had no clue she'd gone beyond breaking his silly rules and done something truly stupid.
I drove Ian to the Angel House with the kids in the car. I thought maybe Ty would like to see Gloria, but as soon as he did, it triggered memories of Pam.
All the blood that drained from Sarah's face magically appeared in Hunter's cheeks.
What's the matter with you? You know I don't even like Sarah going there since that violent husband attacked her.
I'm sorry. I think of Ty as yours, so Pam never crossed my mind. I was stunned when he ran toward the house, calling out, Mama.
Gentry closed her eyes to avoid seeing Sarah's face.
For God's sake, Gentry, when will you learn to think before you act?
Hunter banged the spoon on the side of the pan, all traces of humor erased.
I'm sorry.
Her spine curved like a shrimp, and she looked at the ground.
He seems okay now.
Sarah put Colt back into his car seat, her voice slightly strained.
How do you calm him down?
Gentry closed her eyes again, mumbling,
I gave him a cupcake.
She heard the spoon clatter in the stainless steel sink right before Hunter muttered in dismay.
How the hell can I trust you with our son when you show such poor judgment and disrespect our rules? He looks like you tried to drown him in muddy water, too.
I'm sorry, but we had fun, Hunter. We played by the lake with giant bubbles and squirt guns. I took some amazing photos of him and Colt. Wait till you see them.
She hugged herself.
I loved spending time with him. We had a perfect morning, and he was so happy, giggles spilled out of him.
Until confronted by memories of his dead mother, you mean.
Her brother spoke low enough not to be heard by his son, his owlish gaze tearing through her like claws.
Let's just hope he doesn't have nightmares about Pam tonight.
Ty was playing quietly in the family room by himself. He didn't appear to be suffering. Did the memories of sitting beside Pam's dead body for hours lurk in his memory? Would those be his nightmares? Tears formed behind Gentry's eyes. Even when she had the best intentions, she screwed up. At this rate, she might as well give up trying to be one big happy family. For every step forward, she stumbled 10 steps backward. It was an honest mistake, Hunter. She obviously feels bad about it, so let's not make it worse. That won't help anyone. Sarah crossed to her husband and stroked his back. I'll take Ty upstairs and read to him. He needs a nap, anyway. No fighting while I'm gone. On her way out of the kitchen, Sarah squeezed Gentry's shoulder. After she disappeared, Gentry faced her brother.
I'm sorry,
Gentry reiterated, her voice tight with desperation.
Really, really sorry.
Hunter shoved his burger into his mouth. Perspiration dribbled down her spine during the endless seconds she waited for him to finish chewing. He sighed, his tone shifting from anger to frustration.
You're a mom now, Gentry. You've got to start thinking like one.
I do.
Do you? Have you figured out Colt's childcare? How will Colt feel when Ian disappears from his life? Last year, you swore there'd be no way to find Smith. Now we're suddenly hiring a PI. Seems to me like you still jump into decisions without considering the consequences.
Being thrust on the defensive brought her armor up, and with it, her chin.
Hiring the PI is me thinking like a mom. Colt will want to know who his father is.
Colt's your business. But when it comes to Ty, you've got to respect Sarah's and my wishes.
Hunter sighed, slapping the crumbs off his hands after he finished the burger. In record time, she thought.
He set his plate in the sink, then surprised Gentry by slinging an arm over her shoulders.
We'll let today's slip-ups go, since Ty seemed calm enough.
I swear, I swept him away as soon as he reacted. I know the cupcake thing wasn't the best solution, but I panicked.
I understand. But be honest with me. Exactly how many cupcakes did you give my son today?
Gentry stared into his intense hazel eyes.
Not near enough.
Ian's plan to slip up to his room unnoticed fell apart the moment he entered the condo. Gentry lounged on her sofa in pajama shorts and a tank top, a MacBook resting on her thighs, with a glass of red wine keeping her company.
I thought you'd never come back.
She set the laptop to one side and crossed her legs. Raising her hands in a hold-the-phone manner, she launched into a recitation of her afternoon.
I have good, bad, and frustrating news. The good. Hunter didn't kill me, and Colt went down easily tonight. Thus, the celebratory glass of Pinot Noir. She pointed at the wine glass, then huffed, moving on. The bad news? Hunter and Sarah probably won't let me be alone with Ty for months, maybe years. I've been crossing my fingers and toes that he has sweet dreams tonight instead of nightmares. Our whole beautiful morning ruined by one snap decision.
Gentry took a break to sip some wine.
Gentry, Ian began, but she cut him off without sparing him more than a passing glance, eager to finish her diatribe.
She must have been storing up all afternoon, waiting for his arrival.
And finally, the frustration. There are a lot of options for the crowdfunding, but I need your input. Different platforms require different things, like photos versus videos, details about the purpose, and so on. I couldn't get very far on the scant information I have. Of course, I can make suggestions if you'd like, based on what I did learn.
Stop. Please. Ian held up his hand. This can all wait.
Her brows rose high on her forehead, in surprise, as if he'd slapped her across the cheek. Only then did she take a breath and actually examine him.
Sorry, he mumbled, tossing the key on the entry table.
She set her feet on the floor, then narrowed her eyes.
What's wrong?
Nothing you need to worry about. I appreciate that you're trying to help. I just can't do this now.
He started for the stairs, but in a few hurried strides, she beat him there.
Hold up. She rested one hand on the iron banister, turning her body into a toll gate, the price of which, information, he didn't want to pay.
Tell me what happened.
Another night he might. But the last thing he needed just then was Gentry Cabot standing so close.
I know you're used to getting your way, but not tonight. I want to be alone.
Whoa. Insults? Okay, Ian, what's got you this upset?
She displayed uncommon patience as she reached for his hands, but he pulled away, making her frown.
I don't understand. I thought we were...
What? He snapped, head pounding so hard he thought his temples might explode. Thought we were what?
Friends, she finished, blinking twice.
Friends? Whatever they were or might ever have become, he doubted it was that. And while he'd been playing make-believe family today on a grassy knoll, his actual friends were in trouble.
I'm off the clock now, so if you don't mind, I'd like to go upstairs.
He immediately regretted that remark. Her green eyes flickered from hurt to anger.
I see.
Crossing her arms, she argued,
in that case, as your boss, I need to know if whatever hijacked your manners will affect your ability to take care of Colt tomorrow.
It won't.
They stood at the base of the stairs, locked in a game of chicken. The night-blackened windows behind her reflected the pristine interior of this home. A home that wasn't his and was as opposite of where he should be as possible. She stepped aside and waved him on.
Fine.
He brushed past her and took the steps two at a time, but not fast enough to avoid catching her staring at him from below. He'd apologize in the morning. Right now, he needed to close his eyes and think. He shut his bedroom door and flopped onto the mattress. The pillow top support and snowy white linens surrounded him in lavender-scented luxury. His skin itched from the sin of it. His hands balled into fists. Marie Ormont's friendly smile surfaced in his memory. A Kansas native and middle-aged mission worker, she'd spent the past 4 years running a home in Port-au-Prince that fed children 2 meals per day. Or she had, until this week. Some gang members had shot her in her car and taken her 10-year-old son, Timmy. Missing. Kidnapped. Disappeared. Whatever the word, the result was the same. 2 more victims of the poverty and corruption that would never end if people like Ian got distracted and failed to make a difference. He punched the down comforter, as if flattening it would change a thing. Not that his being in Haiti would have made much difference for Marie. Ian flung an arm over his eyes to relax. He remembered his father's advice when, a decade earlier, a native they'd worked with had also disappeared.